Wow, I really fail as a host of a podcast. And welcome to the 14th episode of the Negative World Podcast, the only video game podcast that has not made fun of the Wii U name yet. Honestly, I'm pretty sure it only slipped our minds. We are recording this on Saturday, July 30th. I am your handsome host, Guillaume, and with me today I have Chris BG99.
Yo.
And we also have a very special guest here, Andrew Eisen.
Hello.
So this week we're trying something a little bit different. You know, as we just mentioned, we have a special guest. Andrew Eisen made the very popular YouTube video, Nintendo, Why Won't You Let Me Give You My Money? And this video has been picked up by pretty much every blog out there, Go Nintendo and Destructoid and everyone. And they mentioned your video on RFN as well. Like the host, Johnny Metz, said that you had a very good radio voice. And like lots of praise all around for the arguments that you're putting forth. So we're going to be, you know, taking that opportunity to revisit the Operation Rainfall topic a little bit. And we're also going to have two more topics, the 3DS price cut and what it means for us gamers and for Nintendo. And we're also going to discuss gender in games that offer us the choice to play as women. So let's just start with the Operation Rainfall stuff. First, like, I don't know, Andrew, you're probably a little bit tired of doing this at this point, but, like, do you want to perhaps, like, go over the arguments that you were making in your video?
Sure. My argument was mainly, you have games I want to play, Nintendo. If you let me buy them, I'll buy them. It really comes down to that.
Pretty much, that was pretty much the gist of it. And I think that lots of people, you know, generally praise the video. And I think that one of the things that was refreshing about it was that it wasn't really any kind of ultimatum, you know? Like, there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions on the internet. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, perhaps, like, everything seems to be one big knee-jerk reaction on the internet. Yeah. But, like, the video was just basically, you know, Nintendo, I'm on your side. I've been buying your software, and there's no software that you're putting out right now. And if there were, I would be buying it. Yeah, I think that's probably why the video made the rounds, and also the fact that you presented like the argument that pretty much every piece of software that Nintendo put out in Japan sold better in North America.
According to the data I looked at, yeah. Also, just to throw in, I did consciously try to make the video non-threatening and non-antagonistic, which is sometimes something I struggle with when you have a voice like mine. It's almost inevitable a lot of times. I'll say, hey, how are you? And like, oh my God! Like, just saying hello. Please don't hurt me. Yeah. When I originally wrote the script for that video, I was considering putting in something that alluded to, see, I have all of this money here. If you're not going to take it, I'm sure I can find someone who will. But I think the implication is there in the first place, and there's really no reason to state it explicitly. So I left that out.
Yeah, this is a lot of the video. When I watched the video finally this afternoon, sorry.
All right.
It's basically the same argument I made when we were trying to get Nintendo to release Mother 3 here. Mm-hmm. I remember crying about that almost. Just wanted to say, I got this money. I want to give it to you. Why won't you let me give it to you? And that's
is it not green enough?
Yes. I love Earthbound.
It's all colorful and Canadian, but ours is just a paltry green, but it's still
should be
good
enough. It's got pretty colors in it now.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. They are interesting shades.
And holograms.
Dull orange and pink. Soon we will be using Monopoly money.
Be about worth it. More worthwhile than our money right now.
It might be, yeah.
I don't know if your video would have been as powerful if you had been laying Monopoly money on that table.
Probably not.
Sam Claiborne of IGN actually suggested that I use pizza next time instead of money. That might be more alluring.
For Reggie, who used to be at Pizza Hut, right?
Did he?
Reggie used to be, like, I don't know exactly what his position was, but he was, like, heading Pizza Hut in some fashion in the 90s before going to Nintendo. So that's probably the illusion that he was making. Okay, so, like, your video was very popular, except perhaps with, like, one member of Negative World who decided...
Can't please everybody.
Yeah, I guess so. But I do want to bring up the points that Steven made on Negative World, because, like, they were actually, you know, interesting and well-articulated. Mm-hmm. Basically, he doesn't believe that Nintendo would listen to that video because they already know... they've already done the calculations. They already know that they're passing on revenue there, and they're fine with that. I'm assuming that the numbers that you used were taken from places like BJ Charts, right?
Mm-hmm.
One would have to assume that the numbers that Nintendo has are much, much more precise.
Oh, certainly.
Not only like they know exactly how many units they've sold, but they probably know at what price. And all of those details. So, like, his argument was that basically they've already made the decision and they're fine with passing on that revenue. And, like, you're not actually teaching them anything, you know? Mm-hmm. Basically, if, like, you don't make the argument, unless you're actually threatening to put your money elsewhere, perhaps, like, to purchase another console, which is going to mean like less mindshare for Nintendo, or unless you're not, you know, threatening a boycott or of future software like the Legend of Zelda or something like that, then there's not really that much of an incentive for Nintendo to be swayed by your arguments.
Hmm. Well, if Nintendo has data that shows that releasing these games would not be in its best financial interest, certainly no argument I'm going to make is going to convince them otherwise. I'm absolutely sure that Nintendo does have a reason that it sees as perfectly valid for not releasing the titles I mentioned in North America. However, I have no idea what that reason is. So instead of tweeting or doing a Facebook post that says, "Thank you for being such an awesome fan, but we have no plans to release these titles," might help, at least as far as fans are concerned, if they'd elaborate on that and tell us why not. You know, some of us are adults, and I'm sure we could take it. It would still be disappointing, but if Nintendo said, "Look, we've got really smart people with degrees and everything that have looked at the same numbers you've looked at, and numbers that are more accurate than the numbers that even the NPD and MediaCreate come out with, and we have decided it is not in our best financial interest to release these games in North America. We just won't make enough money to justify the cost of doing so. Plus, we tried shopping it around to other publishers to see if anyone else would like to try releasing them, and we couldn't get a single one to bite. So we're very sorry. We appreciate your fandom, but that's why we're not releasing them." I think most Nintendo fans would be, well, can't argue with that. Still...
Except that we probably already know that they haven't been shopping around to find another publisher for them.
You know, I have a feeling they haven't.
Yeah, I'm sure that Exceed or Atlas are foaming in the mouth, you know, or would just jump on the opportunity to release these titles, especially now that there's been such free publicity for them at this point.
That, and there's very little competition for that type of that style of game right now, at least the three RPGs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't just say like on a Wii, I would say on any platform at this point. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to find titles of that quality, you know, like the Final Fantasy 13, probably the biggest name that came out recently and was generally seen as a disappointment for people. And when I listen to podcasts like Warning, a huge podcast, or 8-4-Play, these Japanese-centric video game podcasts, they're basically just like gushing over Xenoblade. And I can't believe that Nintendo is not bringing it over here.
Especially since they're releasing it everywhere else in the world, including Australia. And I don't say that to talk down to our Australian buddies, but man, why not us? You know, and that's really the big question. Why not? Seriously, just why not? I'm sure there's a good reason. I'd love to hear it. As far as negative incentives like boycotting or switching to another system, speaking of boycotting at least, I would never deny myself the opportunity to play something I really want to play, like The Legend of Zelda, just because other games I want to play aren't being released here.
I absolutely agree.
That, to me, is really silly. Plus, if we're trying to show Nintendo that there are enough of us here to buy these games, I don't think refusing to buy the games they do bring us is really the best way to show that.
Mm-hmm.
Just my opinion, though.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not really sending the message that to Nintendo by not buying The Legend of Zelda that Xenoblade would have sold. You're sending the message, well, Zelda isn't selling. Imagine just how much less Xenoblade would have sold.
If Zelda's not selling, a no-name franchise like, at least not in a series, Xenoblade has no chance, especially this late in the Wii's life cycle.
Absolutely. So,
I think, and again, just my opinion, the best thing that any of us can do is just let Nintendo know we're here, and if you bring us games, we will buy them. Simple as that.
And that is what the whole Operation Rainfall is about. Have you guys sent in your letters and received the typed response?
Yeah, I've seen everyone getting the same form letter back. And it's funny because if there might be more than one form letter, but the one I've seen actually says Last Story Xenoblade and Pandora's Tower, even if you just mentioned one specific game, which if you're following the Operation Rainfall procedure, you emailed one game at 1 week, one game the next, one game the next week. I've seen a lot of people getting back form letters that it's obvious they didn't really read it and customize the response, but Nintendo knows. You know, Nintendo does see that there are at least a couple of us here who are anxious to play these games. Whether that's enough to convince Nintendo to release them here or not remains to be seen. I've seen, there was a list, I forget who put it up, but it's a list of other consoles, games, peripherals that Nintendo said we have, quote, no plans to release that were then later released. So just because they said we have no plans to release these games doesn't necessarily mean that they have no plans to release these games. However, at this point, if Nintendo is really saying, oh, we're going to keep these games close to the chest, we're going to surprise all of you, it's going to be so cool, I think that's a really bad idea at this point. These games really needed to be announced at E3.
You know, like, they would have had a golden opportunity there for, you know, free publicity.
Oh, absolutely.
To just, like, appease the fans, and they didn't take it. And they actually, like, their Twitter message or Facebook, I can't remember, was kind of seen as an insult, you know? Like, thanks for being such great fans, but, you know, we don't care.
Imagine, you know, especially at E3 when they're announcing the Wii U console and they're saying, we love all of our casual game fans that we've brought into the fold over the last 4.5 years. But we also love our longtime loyal fans, the hardcore gamer, the guys that have stuck with us through thick and thin. With our next console, we want to appeal to everybody. Our new casual fans, our longtime loyal hardcore gamers, and even the ones that felt the Wii wasn't for them and drifted away from the fold, so to speak. We want everyone to come back and enjoy the Wii U. One good way to do that would be, for those of you who are still here, we've got Legend of Zelda, and we've got Xenoblade, which is, you know, from the folks who brought you Xenosaga, and you've got Last Story, which is from the guy who brought you Final Fantasy, which is pretty popular here, at least well known. And the, what's the other one? Pandora's Tower. You have to force feed a vegetarian monster meat to keep her from turning into a slug monster, and you have a chain whip. How awesome is that? You know? Just one more thing is, Nintendo seems to be saying, for the loyal, hardcore Nintendo fan that's still here, we love you, here's Zelda. Other than that, just wait till the Wii U comes out. Just sit there, twiddle your thumbs, and wait for the next console, which isn't coming out for about 14 months. That's a long time to wait with no good, meaty games to play.
Personally, I'm looking forward to Rhythm Heaven and Kirby, but still, like, that's not a whole lot. Like, there's still...
Oh, I'll be honest, probably... there are games that are coming out in the next year or so that I will buy. Rhythm Heaven and Kirby are the Nintendo-published titles, at least. I'm not sold on them yet. I don't think I'd buy either of them for full purchase price, full $50. I really enjoyed Epic Yarn, but I haven't quite seen enough of Kirby. I think they Return to Dreamland, is that what they're calling it now? Something like that?
I've got no idea.
Yeah.
It's just Kirby Wii to me.
Yeah, that's what it is on Amazon anyway. I'm interested in it, but I'm not completely sold on it yet. Rhythm Heaven looks cool. I like rhythm games, but it's a game where you tap one or two buttons rhythmically. That's not something I'd pay $50 for. It's also not one of those hardcore, I'm going to take a weekend and I'm going to sit on my couch and spend hours playing this game. There's nothing wrong with a game that you sit down and play for 20 minutes. It's just not that deep, hardcore experience that you can just sink your teeth into.
I'm not so sure, though, if I agree with your definition of a hardcore gaming experience, because...
It certainly depends on how you define hardcore, certainly, yes.
Yeah, and I did... I played a little bit of Rhythm Heaven on the DS, and I enjoyed it just fine, you know? But I did play the Wii version, the demo for the Wii version at E3, and it's just amazing how much... The presentation, just the fact that it's on a console and that it's using like bright, colorful graphics makes the game more fun. Like the whole rhythm aspect is already, you know, like tried and true. But the fact that these little scenarios play out while you're playing, it's pretty genius in my opinion.
Absolutely. But I'm not sure it's a game I would, it's certainly something I'd play, something I'd play to completion as long as it doesn't use motion control, because that would kill the game. And I don't believe it does. I think it's either tap the A button or tap A and B. I think that's the only controls in the entire game. I don't think they're having you shake the remote rhythmically, which is a good call.
Yes. And anyone who wants more impressions on these on Rhythm Heaven Wii and the games at E3, you can check out the special episode. I can't remember. I think it was 7 or 8. It's been a while now. But yeah, we had myself and Triforce Bun from BrawlInTheFamily.com shared our impressions for the various demos. All right. What was the other point? Oh, yeah. Like there's a lot of people... who raise a lot of valid points about the fact that it's probably a whole lot more expensive for Nintendo to release or to localize games in North America than it is in Europe, actually, because the population density is so much lower that distributing game takes... Yeah, it's just a much more expensive endeavor.
I'm not following the logic of that. How so?
Just the shipping costs and the...
Oh, okay. I think I see where you're going with that. It's certainly a bigger area, and it's further to... if everything's being printed in Japan, it's certainly further to ship it, but I can't imagine that it's that much more expensive. But I don't know. I don't know what the costs of that are. I would have to think, just from a localization standpoint, and I mean just making a localized copy, not the cost of shipping it there, would actually be more expensive for Europe because there's more languages. America, it's pretty much just English. Europe, you've got English, German, French, and maybe one or two others.
Yeah. Sorry, I just got a message from ex-Bob, and he's very sorry. And I'm going to add him if you guys don't mind.
No, not at all.
No problem.
Oh, suddenly XBob42 just joined us.
Yes, real name Rico Suave.
Really? So not even Robert? I mean, or is Rico the equivalent for Robert?
Oh, yes, it certainly is.
All right, cool. Let's pick up where we left off, I guess. Yeah, like the whole language argument is, like, there's something that I saw being argued that's a couple of times was the fact that the French and Latin America, American tracks would have to be redone because, you know, Quebecois French and French from France is completely different. And it's the same between, you know, Spanish from Spain and, you know, in America. But I'm not sure exactly how much validity that argument has because I'm actually a French Canadian, and I did check out, usually by default, like I just play my games in English, but just for the purpose of research, I tried the French version of these games, mm-hmm. Of certain games that had voice acting. The only two that came out that were recent were Sin and Punishment and Metroid Other M, and both of them actually only have the English track, and both of them simply subtitle whatever you see on screen during the cutscenes.
Right. From what I've seen of Nintendo published titles anyway, there is typically in the instruction booklet and in the language options of the game a Spanish and French option. Now, I don't speak either language worth a lick, so I don't know how accurate they are, but hopefully they're good enough for our gamer friends who speak those languages as their primary.
Right, but The main point is that, like, they wouldn't have to re-record any audio track, and subtitles generally are much cheaper to translate or to mm-hmm. adapt in this case than the actual spoken dialogue would have to be.
Certainly.
And actually, there is one piece of software that Nintendo has that has voice acting and that they, you know, bothered to dub in French. And it's Wii Fit Plus. And I did check that out. And it's actually the French from France track. Oh, and no. The lady has a strange lisp. I'm not sure why. But yeah, it's definitely a European track. So to anyone saying that like it would cost too much for Nintendo to localize Xenoblade because of the, you know, like, I think people just want to blame Canada in general for well, whatever befalls them.
I can agree with
always.
That.
For anyone who would want to blame Canada, I'm sorry you can't do that this time because it doesn't cost a thing. Nintendo just doesn't bother.
Yeah. Yeah, for anyone who would argue, well, they'd have to do new French and Spanish subtitles, I'd say, no, they don't.
Absolutely
they don't have
not.
To.
They wouldn't have to do a new English dub. Since, you know, most Americans who would play Last Story or Xenoblade really wouldn't care if they were speaking with a British accent.
You know, I'm one of the folks who, if I had the option, would play it in the original language anyway.
Well,
so
yeah,
dub,
me too.
Dub
I don't care either way,
game.
But if they're worried about, like, not having an American dub,
mm-hmm.
American English over British English or something like that, I don't think most of us would care.
No, I mean, look at our Academy Awards. Anyone doing a British accent or is British gets nominated for Best Actor or Actress. We love the Brits. It sounds awesome.
Yeah. A Brit is our Batman. I mean, come on.
I think we can agree that with Super Mario All-Stars being released on a retail disc, Nintendo's not too worried about anything at all.
That's a good point.
That was so lazy on Nintendo's part. Oh, man, I pissed Poop. And moaned over that one for quite a while. I wasn't going to buy it because I own Super Mario All-Stars on the Super NES. I already have it, so I have no need for it. But, I mean, that release for Mario, it's his 25th anniversary, and they couldn't even be bothered to update the button icons on the main screen. I'm like, how lazy can you be? It's Mario, for crying out loud. Lift a finger, would you? And they didn't even give us the one that included Super Mario World also. And it would have been nice if the soundtrack had more than 10 tracks on it.
It's the birthday you'd expect Mario to get from an abusive, drunken father.
Sounds like Nintendo of America.
Yeah. So, when people were talking about the Zelda 25th anniversary, I was being very pessimistic. I was saying, look, folks, Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D is the 25th anniversary. They're not doing anything more than that. But, you know, to Nintendo's credit, they are doing a little bit more than that. They're doing the the Symphony Concert series, one of the re-releases of old games, sure, but, you know, Four Swords and Link's Awakening or something like that. It's going to be available later in the year. So they're putting some effort into it this time, which is nice to see.
It's just amazing how little fanfare that Mario got for his own anniversary. I mean, he's only the biggest icon in gaming.
The Sega's doing more for Sonic the Hedgehog than Nintendo's doing for Mario or Zelda.
Or Metroid.
Well,
or Metroid, yeah.
Which is also, if I'm counting right, I think is on its 25th this year, too.
Yeah, I don't think that Nintendo will care about that. Well, they did release, like, posters. No, wait, did they? No, there were Donkey Kong posters. Forget about that.
Donkey Kong's on his 30th.
I was just imagining the office of Nintendo, Iwata, just walking down, and an intern looks at him and says, "Oh, hey, what are we doing for Super Mario's 25th anniversary?" And the camera just zooms in on Iwata, and he's like, "Oh, crap!" And that's how we got the retail Super Mario Brothers.
That was today? So of the three Rainfall games, which particular one is on the top of your most want list?
Xenoblade, by a long shot.
Really?
Ditto for me.
I think I say Last Story.
I'm Last Story also.
Well, then we have to fight.
Yes. I'll get the bathing suits.
I don't know, I got the guy with the awesome voice.
I'm not saying I'm not looking forward to Xenoblade. I absolutely am. But if you had both sitting in front of me and I only had $50, I'd pick up Last Story.
Well, we know you have way more than that. I mean, don't try.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I'd buy both, but Last Story would be the first one that goes in my Wii.
Am I the only one here who listens to the 8-4 Play podcast? Like, it's 8-4 is the localization company that did recently localization for Dragon Quest VI. And they've got their podcast centered about, well, you know, about gaming in Japan. Not really Japanese gaming, because they always talk about American titles, which pisses me off. But they did discuss Xenoblade, and one of the guys had the interesting comparison. Like, he said basically that Xenoblade was probably like the most modern Japanese RPG that he had played at this point, and that it was kind of a combination of World of Warcraft and Call of Duty and Modern Warfare. And basically, like the whole Modern Warfare thing was basically because the game rewards you for everything, you know, not just combat, but whenever you discover a landmark or something like that, you just like achievement, you know, something unlocked, or I don't know exactly, but you get experience points for exploring and for doing unusual things. And RPGs are supposed to be about exploration. I mean, like, Square Enix forgot about that when they made Final Fantasy 13, but it's...
Go down this hallway.
I hear it opens up after hour 60.
Temporarily.
Then you end.
Yeah, and then you're herded back onto the track, and yeah, it ends. But yeah, Xenoblade, completely open, really awesome. Apparently, Japanese gamers who did play it, all like, it's one of the highest scoring games on this website that Japanese people rate games on, I guess, doesn't determine how popular it is, because like just three people could have played it and rated it highly, and you know, like it would be at the top. But you know, it's a good indicator of how much the people who did play it liked it.
Well, also the pedigree behind the game is undeniable.
Yeah, it's a proven team that Nintendo bought and decided to, you know, completely ignore. Yeah, so like I assume that since Nintendo is completely ignoring our plea, will you guys be modding, or have you already modded your Wiis, and will you be importing?
Nope.
Probably not.
Waiting for a US release, if it ever happens.
Yeah.
I'm still stubborn over Mother 3, so I guess I'll be stubborn over this.
I don't know. I might do it, but it's only because I've actually got a brother in England who might be... Like, it would be a cheap way to import these games, just having bring them over for Christmas. And but I don't have a modded Wii right now. It kind of scares me a little bit, especially right before Zelda comes out. You know, you just know that Zelda is going to contain the new firmware that's going to, you know...
Break your system.
Block everything. Absolutely.
That's right. That's the problem with the... a lot of people in the comment section of my video have said, just get a freeloader, and that's a fine idea. Except one of the updates from a couple of years ago busted the freeloader, and the company behind it has not come out with a new version that gets around that. And you could say, well, just... put your system back to factory default whenever you want to play the new games. But the problem is, with at least Nintendo published titles, they include the firmware update on the disc, and it will update your system before you can start playing. So
yeah, and wouldn't like putting your Wii back to factory default like just erase completely
your
all
saves
your
and stuff?
Virtual console? Yeah, and,
I believe so.
You can put it all in an SD card.
No, most of it. You can't keep all your saves.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I would think that the virtual console stuff, like it would be like trying to play them on a different Wii, like it wouldn't work.
Well, it's also I'm just not going to the trouble to do that. You know, a lot of people have also said, why don't you just buy a European Wii? I'm like, oh, buy another Wii console just to play all the games in the system's library? Sure, I could. I'm just not going to go to that expense.
Doesn't it have, like, its own complications?
You know. Well, yeah. I don't think my television will correctly display a PAL video signal, so I would have to buy some sort of external converter to get that to work right. I think the power brick that comes with the American Wii will actually fit in the European Wii, so that's probably not an issue. But still, I'm not buying a whole another Wii just to play more Wii games. I shouldn't have to do that, and I'm not going to. And I'm not going to complete my Japanese language training and import one from Japan either.
Is this the summer drought that Nintendo of America was aiming for, or were they just deciding, hey, let's have no games for the next 5 or 6 months? It just doesn't seem very smart.
You know, like, this would be a perfect transition for the next topic, I guess, because, yeah, like, Nintendo has this new strategy of not releasing games, and I don't know, it doesn't seem to be working out for them at all. So, like, why don't we move on directly to the topic of the 3DS?
If I may, one more thing on Operation Rainfall.
Sure.
Operation Rainfall is currently working on what they're calling a PSA, but it's basically they're putting together a little video, kind of a training video for new Rainfall recruits. You know, what is Rainfall? What does it do? What doesn't it do? How can you join and why would you want to? That kind of a thing. And they asked me if I would be interested in narrating the video. They don't have a script yet, so I haven't... you know, confirmed my involvement in it, but I'm certainly interested in, if they come up with a cool script, I'd certainly like to look at it and maybe narrate it for them. So if any of the listeners are writers and interested in pitching in, go to the Rainfall blog, and as of right now, the first entry there will take you to a forum post where folks are pitching script ideas. So if you'd like to participate, go right ahead, and maybe they'll come out with a cool video, and maybe I'll narrate it. Thank you.
so I think, X-Bob, I'm going to let you, since this was your topic, I'm going to let you present it, the 3DS. Explain us the situation a bit.
Well, as I'm sure you've probably heard by now, the Nintendo has announced that the 3DS will be dropping in price in the next couple of weeks from, what is it, $250 to down to $169. And I wanted to talk about what this means for the 3DS, what it means for Nintendo's immediate future, long term, and what they're thinking right now about the market as a whole, such as the PS Vita and, of course, the iPod and all that stuff.
They're thinking, oh, crap.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Well, like, the whole idea behind the launch, like, first, there's so many mistakes that Nintendo made with the 3DS. It's hard to, you know exactly where to start. I guess, like, it all started back when the 3DS was first unveiled. They showed it to a crowd of excited gaming journalists who were amazed that this thing could actually produce 3D graphics and, you know, without the need for glasses. Mm-hmm. And the reaction was so positive that later on, like, Nintendo let on that, like, the positive reception there actually made them think, like, that the price would probably be high. You know, like, it confirmed that they could ask for a high price. But why would you listen to gaming journalists for this kind of stuff? You know, like, gaming reviewers were also excited for the PSP, and they thought that it would just, like, cream the DS, like, right out of the gate. Just based on its power alone, you know, like the DS when it came out was seen as, like, you know, the loser handheld, like the underpowered and not really terribly appealing. And of course, like the first model, the DS Fat, was pretty crummy, but I mean, and like the PSP looked so slick by comparison. But still, like, they absolutely gushed over the PSP, thought it was, like, a sure thing.
Yeah, it's like, I think we can all agree that in the last 5 or 6 years, gaming journalists have made a career out of being wrong.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And, like, they don't represent the, well, you know, I don't want to say normal people, but that's, yeah. I don't want to say casual audience either, but, you know, the man on the street.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Joe.
Yeah, sure. Like, most people would not sink $250 into a dedicated handheld, like, gaming machine. It doesn't work like that. Like, they would rather apparently buy iPods or iPhones. But we'll get to that later. But yeah, so that's basically where it all started, right? And then Nintendo also showed, like, a lot of promising third-party support, but, like, that was basically just, like, a couple of logos on screen. And a lot of those games never turned out. And, like, one in particular, Saints Row, was never even in production, which really makes you wonder, like, just what do you need to do to have your logo on, you know, on a slide that Nintendo shows? Like, apparently, perhaps, like, if I had told them that Negative World was going to develop a game, maybe we could have had, like, the Negative World logo on there. That's all you need. But yeah, so, and like the part of their strategy was to delay the release of their own games, which were completed, and just let the third parties basically give them all the space that they needed to sell a ton of copies. But it really, really didn't work that way. Like, sales of the 3DS were slow at the beginning, and people did not buy the software. Like, I mean, the highest selling game was supposedly Street Fighter 4, but that's numbers of units shipped, not sold. And I don't know. It's just a whole mess. So here we are now, like 3-4 months after the release. We only got the eStore last month or 2 months ago. And there's still not a whole lot of software available. And Nintendo's already slashing the price by $80.
I think a lot of that also has to do with branding. I mean, what's the average consumer going to think when they see the 3DS? They're probably going to think it's just the new revision of the DS. It doesn't really tell a whole lot besides that there's 3D without glasses, and you can't really tell that from commercials either, so it's really hard to convey that to the consumer. But at the same time, you can't price it based on a knee-jerk reaction to a bunch of video game journalists. You can't release without one of the main components, the eShop. It just, they botched a lot at the launch of this thing.
Absolutely. And Nintendo tried to assure journalists that they would have like a great marketing campaign, that you would find 3DSs everywhere in stores, that people, you know, like trying is believing, all that sort of thing. And is it just me, or like, are there still very few 3DSs on display anywhere?
There's one at the Fry's Electronics by me, and there's one in the Best Buy, but I haven't seen more than that.
I'm in the Bay Area, and I've seen maybe two GameStops out of several hundred that have actually had these things on display. It seems like they're not really rushing to put it out there for consumers.
I think one of the big problems is something you touched on, is the fact that the average consumer either has no idea this thing is even out, or that it's a new console. And a lot of that has to do with the advertising, which I went back and looked at, and it seems to be, you know, happy people in a sterile white room enjoying playing their 3DS. And I think most of the, they seem to try to be, those commercials seem to be targeted at that ultra casual crowd again. And they all have a DS and are like, well, I've got one, and oh, this one's 3D. I'm fine with the one I have. You know, I still have my DS Lite. I didn't really see a need to get a DSi. I don't really want to drop, you know, $250 on a 3DS. So I think they run into that problem. They probably should have gone a bit more what they seem to be wanting to do with Wii U and focus on the hardcore gamer. Look, folks, new platform. It's got an analog stick on it. It's got the GameCube-esque level graphics capabilities. It's in 3D. It goes online. It's got the really cool little AR games. It's got a shop on it. It does the Street Pass thing. You know, sell it to us. This is a new console, not a new iteration of the DS line, but a new console. You need to go play this. You need to buy this. You must have one. But they didn't seem to do that. Although I read an article a couple days ago that they've redone the marketing campaign for the 3DS using his name? It's Shaun of the Dead guy, Simon Pegg. And apparently that's those commercials. I haven't seen them, but apparently they're targeting the hardcore gamer and, you know, showing. You know, they have this radical idea that if they show footage of awesome games, that might entice people to want to play them.
Well, wow, really?
It's crazy enough to work.
Like, one of the things that really surprises me is that, like, when they unveiled the Wii U, they made the exact same mistake of not showing what was different about it, or, like, how they didn't show games, and they didn't show, like, people coming out of the conference thought that it was actually, like, a new controller.
And these are people who have their fingers on the pulse of the gaming scene, and even they were confused. So,
absolutely.
Like, yeah. When you're confusing the enthusiast press with whether or not this is a new console or a new controller, your conference didn't go as planned.
Yeah.
No.
But at least Nintendo has said, yeah. We could have been a bit more clear on that. Sorry, folks. I don't mind so much the fact that they didn't show any games, because at that point they're, you know, 15, 16 months away from the launch of the console. They probably don't have any footage to show yet. That's understandable. But they just didn't back... You know, I like the way they presented it. You know, it's all-inclusive. The Wii is... This is a Wii for you. Ha ha ha. And while it's a lovely sentiment and it got us all jazzed, oh, finally, awesome, they didn't follow that up with anything. I mean,
yeah,
and they did announce, you know, Batman Arkham City is going to be on it. I'm like, great. At that point, I would have played it a year ago, so, I mean, that's nice and everything, but the game will be a year old by that point.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed, too, about their big showing of all those big third-party games. I got a PS3, and most of those games I wouldn't buy for the PS3 anyway, outside of, like, Batman.
Yeah, like that's actually, it's weird because this is actually the whole point that I couldn't remember earlier. like when they showed these games, like I was, okay, so they showed like a bunch of casual stuff. I mean, like they showed that you could have a Wii Fit and not turn on the console or whatever it was. And they also showed a whole bunch of like ultraviolet footage of Ninja Gaiden 2 or 3. I don't care. And it was basically like, Andrew, like you said earlier that, you know, Xenoblade and that story would be a good way to tell like the Nintendo faithful, I guess, that, you know, like the, yeah, we haven't forgotten about you and, you know, we're still going to give you games and you're going to get even more games when the Wii hits. But the thing is, like, I'm not even sure if Nintendo understands who the Nintendo faithful are, because like their presentation kind of reminded me of the Microsoft presentation at last year's E3, where it was like this really, really weird dichotomy between ultra casual Kinect fare and uber violent shooters. And there was like no in between at all. And that's kind of how the Nintendo presentation struck me. Like, it was very, very similar. I mean, of course, like, I'm interested in the new Zelda and new Mario and everything, but like the third parties footage that they, games that they showed, like, it's not really anything that I care about right now. And if I do, I'm going to play it way before the Wii comes out.
This fall.
What a mess.
Yeah. Well, I was, for the most part, pretty pleased with the press conference for Nintendo's press conference at E3. I think it could have been more clear what the Wii U was, but other than almost completely ignoring the Wii itself, I thought it was a pretty good show. I thought they showed enough of the Wii U to make it interesting, to give us something to talk about and chew on for the next year. And there was certainly enough 3DS stuff to be appealing. Really, the only problem was, other than, you know, almost a cursory mention of Zelda and kind of a botched Symphony thing, there was just no Wii stuff. And I'm seeing the same pattern here with that...
The 3DS?
The 3DS conference earlier in the week, the investors conference. There was no mention. I haven't read the full transcript, but as far as I know, there was no mention of the Wii. It's, from a fan perspective, it seems as if Nintendo has completely forgotten about the Wii and its fans.
They want to kill it.
I don't think that's something they should be doing. I think they should be bringing us along with them, not leaving us out in the cold.
It's hard to argue against that.
Yeah. Going slightly off topic on that, in regards to what they think of the faithful Nintendo fan, it's like they're going to show that tech demo of Zelda that's like really awesome, really high fidelity, a lot of color, great orchestrated music. Then they're going to announce some game where the music's mid-eye. Link's going to be riding on a sentient quesadilla or something, and you're just going to be like, this isn't at all what I expected. Why do you hate me, Nintendo?
That'll be the Space World 2000 thing again, where the next... They showed this really awesome little Zelda demo with Link fighting Ganon.
Throws away his shield.
Zelda coming for the game keys, like, I don't even need the shield. I'm going to beat your skull in with my Hylian sword, Ungard. And then the next year they had the Wind Waker preview, which was so horrible, it actually caused those who watch it physical pain.
Especially... I mean, I got physical pain from the original video, but...
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Wind Waker it was a great game, but that the way they presented it and after what they presented, it was just... Like, someone just punched you right in the gut.
Wind Waker was great. It had some significant problems, in my humble opinion, but overall, great game. I love the art style. Can't stand Link's character model, but I do love the aesthetic of that game. But the preview, that one where he winks at the audience, just...
like, you know I hate you.
But going back to the 3DS for a moment. So, okay, so they slashed their price by $80. Does any of you own a 3DS at this point?
Nope.
I got one.
Yeah, so, okay, let's talk about their attempt to appease the early adopters. So what do you think, Chris, of the 20 downloadable games that they announced?
I don't know if I bought a lot of those games, you know, but I think, you know, overall, you know, get 20 games and however much they're going to charge for Game Boy Advance games and their classic NES games, might balance out in the end.
They are claiming that those Game Boy Advance games aren't going to be available to anybody else at all on the 3DS eShop, so that could be something.
I don't believe that at all. For a limited time, I would buy, you know, forever. I don't believe that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, it sounds like they've got, like, technical problems porting them, because, like, I don't know if you've heard about the different feature lists, but the NES games are going to be, not right away, because apparently these features are not properly programmed yet, but you're going to be able to play multiplayer, you know, two-player for the games that allow it. And you're going to be able to have multiple save states, if I understood correctly. But these features won't be in the GBA games, at least not right away. And also, like, there's some strange stuff. Like, there's going to be, when you bring up the home menu, it's going to be a simplified menu. And the Wi-Fi and StreetPass are going to be disabled while you're in a GBA game. So it just looks like perhaps, like, the emulation is not quite up to par yet. So who knows? Like, perhaps it's going to be like us waiting for Star Fox and Yoshi's Island to hit the virtual console on the Wii. Like, they apparently never managed to get the emulation right, and so they never released those games.
I find it odd that Nintendo can't make an emulator for their own previous system on their own current system. I mean, you could get a Game Boy Advance emulator that runs perfectly and has all the features of your iPod on your iPod right now. How come Nintendo can't do this?
I don't know. Maybe it's like the buttons are screwing everything.
Oh, that could be interesting.
And only a complete lack of buttons would be allows this perfect emulation. I've got no idea. Like, it's very, very strange. Like,
maybe they're just cheap. They got one guy working on it, and he's never programmed before. He's just sitting in an office chain smoking. How am I going to get this out there?
Well, that is kind of likely, actually. It's sad.
Makes me
want to cry. To answer your question, though, is what Nintendo has done, is that laudable and the correct thing for them to do, slashing the price significantly by like 30-some-odd percent, only 4 or 5 months into the launch. I think that is a laudable thing for Nintendo to be doing at this point. I think it shows that they are watching, they are listening, and they are cognizant of a lot of the complaints that we've had, that this hardware is just overpriced. I also think it goes a long way in showing that Nintendo cares about its fans by throwing a bone to the folks who are early adopters and giving them 20 free games. And from what I... Yeah. You know, as I was reading the press release, I was like, wow, you just chopped $80 off this sucker? Yeah, $170 is a pretty decent price for the 3DS, I must say, but what about the folks who just picked one up a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago for $250? It's like, well, you guys are awesome, so we're giving you 20 free games. I'm like, that's pretty sweet.
For sure, like, just the sheer number of games that they're giving away is unprecedented. Like, this is Nintendo. They don't even really release compilations of their games usually. You know, like, they absolutely could go the Sega Anthology route, but instead they prefer to sell these games individually at prices that some people say are, you know, are too high. But yeah, so, like, just giving away these games that and 20 of them, that's it's a new Nintendo.
Here's the other thing. It doesn't really cost Nintendo anything to do that. These aren't new games.
Yeah.
These are old games. Now, certainly there's R&D costs in getting them to run on the 3DS and the costs of delivering them to people who are downloading them. But for the most part, it shouldn't cost Nintendo a whole heck of a lot to do this. Plus, doing this actually may up their sales in the future. They may actually make a Nintendo Store buyers out of a lot more 3DS owners than otherwise would have. You know, they give these people 20 free games and they're like, this is awesome. What else is in there? Exactly. So it's certainly, not only is it a nice bone to throw, but it's also an investment in the future.
Absolutely. And this is something that they should have done with the Wii, I've always argued. Like, first, they should always have had, like, the Ethernet port to have, like, the maximum penetration possible. But also, like, they should have had a voucher with a code on it so that, you know, people could download the first Super Mario. Like, sure, they would have sold, they would have lost the sale of Super Mario for the millions that did buy it, who did connect their Wii to the internet. But imagine just how many more people who would have bothered to connect their Wii to the internet if they had had, like, such a voucher. Like, they would have had, like, so much better market penetration, and, like, they probably would have sold a whole lot more Virtual Console and WiiWare games in the end.
Even if they had, you know, packed that voucher in with another game or made it part of some other promotion so it's not completely free, but it's like, hey, buy you know, Super Mario Galaxy or New Super Mario Brothers Wii or something, and get a free Mario game from the Virtual Console. And did you know there's other cool stuff out there, like old Zelda games and stuff you've probably never played, like Solomon's Key.
TurboGrafx-16, you ever hear of that?
TurboGrafx. Hey, and the arcade, which they released a couple games for and then completely forgot about.
Yeah, like the Virtual Console and the Wii could definitely have been better handled. Yeah. And now the tradition is being carried on, at least so far, with like one release or less of like Game Boy games on the 3DS. Like I guess that this announcement that there's going to be 20 new like GBA and NES games released for or given away for the early adopters is a sign that there's going to be a whole lot more content in the future and near future, because these games are coming out like what, September 1st?
Within a month or so, I think they said. Yeah.
Yeah, and but at the same time though, like you got to wonder why they wouldn't have started. Like, why wouldn't they have flooded the eShop with content right away when they actually released it? Like, it's very strange that we're still getting just one game a week. And then all of a sudden, like, they're willing to give out like 10 games or 20 games at the same time to people.
It seems like Nintendo kind of wants their downloadable distribution platforms to fail to some extent. They don't want to make people aware of it. They don't want to get people connected to it. And they just don't put out enough content on it. Do they have? It's like they have something against online in general, is the tone I'm getting from Nintendo. Or they're so far in their own world that they don't understand that online right now is kind of a big deal all over the world, especially when it comes to downloadable content, when you don't want to be carrying 600 carts in your pocket for the games you want
to
play.
They do seem to be rather almost embarrassed of online, and the way they've been doing the last few years, they rather should be. But, you know, as you were saying a couple minutes ago, there's, you know, no Ethernet adapter in the Wii. They did, or not built in, they actually did have an external adapter, but I think they only sold it at the Wii's, or Nintendo's online shop, and it cost like $30 or some ridiculous thing. So.
I feel like we could spend a whole lot of time trying to explain Nintendo's actions. But,
sometimes we just don't know what the hell they're thinking.
Yeah. But do you guys feel that this is like a sign that it's actually going to change, or because I have my doubts. I mean, like the fact that people like the early adopters are getting the games earlier than they're going to be sold tells me that like it's not actually going to change. You know, like the NES games and the GBA games are still going to come out at a trickle, but. Yeah, other than that, like the early adopters will have like all of a sudden 20 games to play, but everyone else is just going to be waiting week after week until that one release that they've been waiting for.
Well, I think things will change, just not as fast as we want them to, because things are changing. I haven't seen it yet, but from what I've read, the interface for the online shop and the other online aspects of the 3DS is miles beyond what it does on the Wii. So,
especially miles beyond what the DSi store looks like.
That too. So it is improving, but I think it will continue to improve and continue to get better. But yeah, it's certainly, almost certainly not as fast as we want it to, and certainly not taking it up to the point we want it at in a timely manner.
Yeah, they are slowly but surely adding functionality to our store. I noticed early on that most of the games that they sell on the eShop have video, or at least pictures that you can look at, like, which is already a huge improvement over like what the DSiWare store looked like.
Sentence.
Yeah, excellent idea. Yeah. You can watch trailers of the game in 3D on your 3DS.
Actually, right, at first, like, you couldn't.
Right,
like, the footage on the eStore, on the eShop, sorry, was in 2D, and my mind was blown. I mean, like, what the hell are you thinking? But it's recently I noticed 3D trailers popping out on the eShop itself, except that I don't know, the 3DS didn't seem to handle them too well still, because the it was streaming and like it would be extremely choppy. But yeah, it looks like they're still working at it, trying to improve it, which they definitely should never stop trying to improve it. It's good. Like, it's better than the DSi store, but it still has a long way to go.
Well, it's not like there's other companies out there who are doing this and have been doing it for a long time that Nintendo could, you know, just kind of peek at to see what the standards are and give them some good ideas.
Yeah. What
amazes me is Nintendo doesn't just look at what Microsoft is doing, look at what Sony is doing, copy that, and add the Nintendo magic touch.
Exactly. I think a lot of it comes back to even the iPod and the smartphone market. Like, regardless of quality, people with those devices, they log on to the eShop on their 3DS, and they're used to, like, a flood of content at all times. And Nintendo releasing things at a trickle and giving very little information, granted they're giving a lot more now with the 3D trailers and all that, it's just something that they're going to say, this is really old, this is really archaic, what is Nintendo doing? Nintendo's usually really good at, you know, selling a product to people, what's going on here? And I think you have to appeal to those people, because a lot of the crossover is going to be from those people. Lots and lots of people have iPods, and many people have smartphones. And the digital distribution content difference, it's massive. And even, like you said, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo can't live in a bubble forever, because they can't always rely on these huge gambles to pay off. And when it doesn't pay off again, we're going to be stuck in another N64 GameCube era where we're getting some great games, but the content's just going to be as slow as a trickle as the 3DS eShop right now, and that's not going to be acceptable.
I agree. Yeah. I think most people today are technically savvy enough to handle a modern interface and a flood of information. That's just the day and age we live in. And those casuals like grandma and grandpa who don't have an iPhone and don't, you know, play on Twitter or Facebook, although a lot of them do, probably aren't going online anyway. They're just going to play Sudoku and call it a day. So I don't think you really have to worry about scaring off folks who probably don't care in the first place. And hey, how else are they going to learn? Push them in.
Absolutely. I'm looking at the eShop right now, and like, there is a ton of content from the fact that most of the DSiWare was carries on, and they do try to put like categories that you can click on, like the top rated games, which is definitely like you couldn't even rate games on the original DSiWare store. I don't know. Like, I think they're on the right path, but. Please don't stop running, Nintendo. Because, seriously, you've already, like, you're two laps behind. Yeah, we have to mention the fact that we can't even communicate with our friends on this thing. Like, it's You can't send messages. You can't tell people, hey, join my game. It's just you have this static message that you can, like your status, basically, and it can only be like 20 characters long. And yeah, good luck trying to tell people, join my Mario Kart game with that limited feature.
Can you type in your own message, or do you have to select from presets?
No, you can type it, but you have to be creative. Like the character limit will, like, yeah. I don't think I can say negativeworld.org on it. It's going to be negativeworld.or. So, yeah, about 20 characters. It's really not enough.
Why, Nintendo? Why? That's what my message would be.
Yeah, why can't we send messages? We were able to send messages on the Wii. So why can't we send messages?
And they'd get there about 8 hours later.
Yes, it was slow, but we could do it.
Those packets have to be mailed physically.
But are you guys going to pick up 3DSs now? Like, is this something that... The price drop, is it motivating you to check it out, or what?
For me personally, that definitely motivates me to pick up a 3DS. That's a very affordable price point for me. $250 is a lot of money. $169, I think I can handle that. And great games are coming out, so yeah.
Yeah, and it's for the same price as the DSi XL. And they actually have no plans. We've heard that before, but they have no plans of dropping the price for the DSi. So like, it's a good deal. Definitely.
I will miss my DSi XL. That screen is huge.
Oh, I'm not getting rid of mine, though. Like, that screen is huge, and I love it. like, personally, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of... I guess I could complain about the fact that these games that they're giving away for free are already bought on the virtual console, and so, you know, like, it's not exactly new content. And, you know, of course, like, the early adopters are the ones who have bought all these games already. But still, like, yeah, it's a very surprising move. And short of like allowing people to transfer their VC Wii purchases to their 3DSs, which they're never going to do, I guess this is the next best thing. At least like a portion of them can be gotten for free.
I think eventually they're going to have to let you transfer your purchases. Maybe not with this system, but eventually they're going to have to get with the times. Although... Can't you imagine how much more market penetration they would have if the 3DS had a little ticker right there that said, ooh, sale on Super Mario Brothers, 50% off. If you were made people aware of something like that, and Nintendo actually had sales more than when they screw up on something, I think people would very much pay attention to the eShop.
Yeah, but the problem is that they went with a strategy of never dropping the price for their retail games. Early on with the Wii, and definitely with the DS. I mean, like, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure that Super Mario 64 DS is still full price, or at least, like, the RS, you know, the suggested retail price is still the same. Like, yeah, it worked out for them. Like, they kept selling Mario Kart at the same full price for years and years and years, and I think they believe that this is the way to go. This is, like, how they're going to achieve maximum profitability. But, yeah, with downloadables and with the way the market is now, I think they're probably in for a surprise if they try keep this up.
Well, in regards to downloadable games and having sales on you know, virtual console titles and that, you do run into the danger, if you're going to do sales, of having a new game coming out and people go, oh, new game, you know, Super Contra or whatever. Nah, I'll wait until that goes on sale. You know, if you start a pattern of, you know, these will eventually go on sale, a lot of people will wait. Not necessarily a bad thing, but I think that also might tie into why the 3DS itself isn't taking off as quickly as Nintendo would like. And it's not a failure by any means. I think it was has sold between 800,000 and 900,000, somewhere around there. So not horrible, but certainly below Nintendo's projections. But what consumers of the DS line have learned is if you just wait for a year, there will be another better model for you to buy.
Yeah.
And especially when the 3DS is $250 right now and has a battery life of 3 hours. I think most people are like, you know, I'm interested in this. I think I'll wait a year. At that point, there will probably be a 199 model. It'll have at least 5 hours on its battery life, and there will be a plethora of games for me to choose from at that point, because we're still in the launch window itis period of the of a newly launched console. So.
Yeah, we did have like a 3DS special episode when it launched, and like most of us were really positive. But again, like this, like the it was completely new, and I guess we still hadn't had a whole lot of time with it. But at this point, like I think that most 3DS owners can admit that the hardware is far from perfect.
Mm-hmm.
First, like you've heard these reports of like the bottom screen creating these scratches on the top screen.
Yeah.
They're not exactly scratches, at least not in every case. Like it's mostly dust that gets trapped in there, and that creates these lines. But it's still like a problem constantly. And there's a squeaky D-pad, which is really annoying.
Really?
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. Like it's actually. Yeah, it's definitely louder than it should be. The circle pad is pretty much the only thing that everyone agrees is...
that pad's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And definitely glad that Nintendo had this idea, because if it had been the PSP nub, definitely there would have been complaints.
Yeah.
And then, like, something that everyone realized when they started playing Link's Awakening, the select and start buttons, not doing their job at all.
Yeah.
They just the fact that they're completely flush, you know, like it's just
It's poor design.
Absolutely, like you can't feel them under your thumb. Like it's very, very hard. So like it's they're not sensitive at all. So who knows what went on there? And
now, those buttons are under the bottom screen, along the bottom, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and so it's not like they're in a position where you're accidentally going to hit. Well, I guess if you're tapping at the screen, you might, but...
Yeah, I don't know what the logic was here. Like, I don't think that they thought this through. And perhaps they thought that, oh, well, we've got the touchscreen there. We don't need the start and select button, because for modern games, like for DS games, a lot of the menu stuff that you usually found by pressing the start button... was right there at your like it was right there for easy access. But then you play these virtual console games, and those aren't designed for the touchscreen. And basically everyone playing Link's Awakening, that's when the realization hit, you know, like, oh right, these buttons suck. I haven't been using them.
Why
haven't
we
been
do
using
this?
No one has been using them for the past, you know, 3-4 months, but all of a sudden, oh, okay, now I need them, and they're not adequate at all. So, yeah, like, to anyone saying that they'd rather wait for a revision, I understand. And I wouldn't try to convince anyone that they have to get the thing now. So it's a good point to bring up. I felt that I needed to do that, since, like, we were so, like, perhaps not gushing in that previous podcast, but... Still, like, there were flaws that needed to be mentioned.
To answer your question, though, me personally, no, I'm not going to buy it. For a couple of reasons. One, I'm not really a handheld gamer. I'm a console gamer. I like sitting, propping my feet up, and playing on my television. I don't do much travel, so I don't have much use for handheld gaming. I prefer to play on my television. That said, while I do really like what they're doing with the price drop, if I were going to buy a 3DS, I'd wait for the next revision. That really low battery life is kind of a killer for me. And as far as maybe dropping $250 on it to get the 20 free games, I own most of them on the NES.
Right.
I have Super Mario Brothers. I have the original Legend of Zelda. I own the original carts. I've played and beat them. So that while it's I really appreciate what Nintendo's doing for its 3DS fans anyway, it's not much of an incentive for me personally. But I'm going to go out and make a prediction. I think the 3DS Lite, or you know, whatever the next iteration of the 3DS is called, will be out in this fiscal year. So by probably sometime in March 2012. I think.
Oh, wow. I can't remember. Did the DS Lite come out like a year after?
About a year and a half, if I'm remembering right. It wasn't too long. But I think, you know, with Nintendo slashing its sales projections by like 80% or something like that and losing $300 million, all their executives taking a pay cut, I think they're going to want to, you know, I think Nintendo knows that a lot of gamers aren't anti-3DS. They're just waiting for the next one, and they'll want to bring that out as quickly as possible. Hopefully they don't release it too darn early. Like, if it's not ready by, you know, March 2012, Nintendo won't be doing itself any favors by releasing it then.
Right.
Yeah, the DS Lite was just so superior to the Fat DS. It was just unbelievable. I know a few people seem to like the Fat DS more, but regarding Andrew's point a few minutes ago on people waiting for the next revision, no, I can't really argue that, because until this price drop, I was waiting for the next revision, and then they dropped the price $80, and it's like, man, I gotta get this. So they've suckered me into buying this and then buying it again in a year or so. But in regards to digital sales, like people just waiting for a game to go on sale, I think that's something you have to deal with in the current digital distribution market, where you make a game go on sale, but it also brings people into the market to look at all these other games. That's why it would be good if Nintendo had oh, you like this game? Well, here's other games of a similar nature that people also liked. And that's why you don't permanently lower your price on digital sales. You just make sales every so often to keep buzz generated about your game and keep people coming back over and over again, and you're able to keep that price. And then you got people who are like, oh, I missed the sale, but everyone's talking about this game. I have to have it. And that's how the digital market currently thrives, is those great sales.
Or even if they did something as simple as, oh, you're buying this game? You like this, do you? Well, you'll love this too. So if you buy this game, you can have that one for half price. But you have to buy this one too. So, you know, even something like that. So they're getting one new title plus one on sale, and that's even more money. And hey, who doesn't like money?
Man, I'd be broke in 5 minutes if that was the case.
Of course, it also helps if they price their downloadable games appropriately.
NES games, $15.
Yeah, seriously. Super Mario Brothers, $5. Okay.
Yeah.
I can dig it. Legend of Zelda, $5. Absolutely. Pinball.
They've already tackled that problem. I mean, like, the 3DS, like, not every Game Boy game is the same price.
Right.
But I think the lesser quality ones or the lesser demanded ones are $3, and then the price goes up from there. I mean, like, Legend of Zelda was a Game Boy Color game, but that came out, that was $6, I think, Link's Awakening. But Super Mario Land, $4, and Quakes, $3.
If Nintendo was smart, and I know Nintendo's pretty smart most of the time when they're not making the worst decisions in the world, they could even have something using... I'm not entirely sure how all the systems in the 3DS work, but they could have something that tracks like how many games per month you purchase. And they could be like, oh, you bought this many games per month? Well, now you can choose a game for free. And that'd be kind of a cheap but also very effective way of keeping people buying games over and over just to get free games.
Yeah,
I think there's a... Yeah, go ahead. That was pretty much what I was going to say.
If you earned experience points for buying digital downloaded games, and it's like you get 100 experience, you level up and get a free game, or you know,
God,
like that. Make an entire alternate reality game out of it.
You're making me excited for something that's never going to happen.
It'd probably end up like the membership thing in Wind Waker, where all you get is thanks.
Oh, or the or the Nintendo
Club,
where you spend a lot of time, you know, doing surveys and registering your games and for stickers, maybe if you're lucky. It's like, do you guys actually register your games and do the survey thing in the Nintendo Club or Club Nintendo or whatever it's called?
I did until I got these sweet Zelda posters, and that was it.
Yeah, I do it because of the Game & Watch games that they had for DS, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I got a sweet messenger bag.
Like, besides these Zelda posters, there was absolutely nothing I wanted, so I haven't registered my Nintendo games in over a year now.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so Andrew, you came up with this next topic that we're going to tackle. I think I'm going to let you present it because it's pretty interesting, but I'm not sure exactly where we're going to go with it.
You never know, but it should be fun. My topic is why, when a video game gives me the choice, do I almost always play as a female character? I've narrowed it down to three main reasons, and these are just my personal reasons. Number one, girls are faster, at least in video games. I personally favor speed and maneuverability over raw power, and the female characters usually accommodate that play style. You know, characters like Chun-Li in the Street Fighter series. You know, that's just how I like to play. So that's one of the reasons I typically just go for the female character. Another reason is pretty obvious, and girls are pretty.
Indeed they are.
Yeah, needless to say, if I'm going to be spending 12 hours staring at someone's backside, I do prefer it be the shapely posterior of an attractive woman.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be one of the arguments.
It's like the way he said it.
How could it not be? My last major reason is the simple fact that I'm not a girl. Don't know if you can tell the voice, but games are all about role play, and I prefer to role play as something I'm not. So rather than play as a male paragon of virtue and altruism, I want to pick a female avatar and director to act like a complete douchewaffle. So now that I've managed to expose myself as both vainglorious and misogynistic in a single sentence, I open the topic for discussion. What are your character selection proclivities and what drives them?
I'm with you on the fighting game thing. When I played Smash Brothers Melee by myself for 3 years, I pretty much played Sheik exclusively.
Sheik's a dude.
Sheik's a girl?
I guess, I guess it depends on the genre. But yeah, like when it's just like selecting, like when you've got different characters that you can select and like in a brawler or something, it's true that the girl's always the fast one. I'll usually pick like the middle dude, whoever is like a perfect balance of power and speed. So I don't know, like, but for like when it's just a question of selecting your avatar, and like basically anyone you pick would have the same characteristics except for, you know, gender. Then I don't know. Like, I don't think I ever did that for the whole trying to play as a female. I usually try to play as myself, and by myself, I mean a video game version of myself who could actually survive for 10 minutes in, like, Fallout or whatever. Do you play role-playing games like that? Like, Western role-playing games where you have to build up your character and do you play World of Warcraft, for instance?
No, I don't.
I do.
Warcraft actually bores the hell out of me. I don't dig the game.
Warcraft bores the hell out of people who play it, so yeah.
Are you having fun? Not really. Why are you playing this? Well, because
I have to.
I am compelled to. I must.
Yeah, so Rico, how, like, do you play as female characters usually, or do you play as a night elf version of yourself?
Well, it largely depends on the type of game. Like Andrew said, I love playing as Chun-Li. Chun-Li is just an awesome character. And with fighting games, I'll just choose whichever character I like to play as. I, too, prefer speed. I'm a big platformer fan, so things like Super Meat Boy, where you're really fast, I love that kind of stuff. But in RPGs, generally, I tend to pick a male. Try to make them as similar to me as possible, just to see what me projecting myself into a game, what it would change about that world. I'm more interested on seeing the impact on the world rather than the difference in my character. And, just like if characters annoy me, I choose something you can't always choose in real life. Just, what'd you call me? I just bitch slap you in there. And so it largely depends on the game type. I'll generally pick a male. No real specific reason. It's like, I'm a dude, I'll pick a dude. I don't really stare at their backsides, so I can't comment on that. I'm usually trying not to look at their backsides because I'm getting attacked by different kinds of monsters. But if I had to look at their backsides, I think I'd prefer a female, you know. Gears of War, I don't want to stare at some big beefy garbage can butt, so...
Well, there's girls in Gears of War 3, so there you go.
Sort of. People in that game look scary.
I have to say, I'm really, this is maybe slightly off topic, but I really like the costuming in Gears of War 3, especially for the females, because they're not in, you know, chainmail bikinis like you'd probably expect them to be.
That's most they're most offensive.
They're still feminine, and they're still obviously women, but they're wearing the same short-sleeved battle armor suit type thing that the guys are wearing. Garbage cans, right. So, you know, kudos to the artistic directors on that game. I was quite pleased with that.
But are they all, like, veiny and muscly?
No.
The girls?
Oh, okay.
No.
Good. They're sort of mannish looking. They don't look like really feminine petite chicks. I get the feeling that the art director came in and said, oh, we have to put women in this game. Well, we've got this big hulky man. Let's just let's put kind of a female model in there. We don't have to really change anything. We don't have to make any new assets. And I think the lack of chainmail bikinis is probably the most disappointing aspect of the game for me, if that says anything about who I am.
So I'm taking that you were a big fan of the Prince of Persia game, like the second one. What was it called? Warrior Within?
Yeah.
You've got like this woman with like a metal thong.
There's you know, she's introduced on a full shot of her rump. She walks into frame with the camera tracking her backside, and she's wearing literally a metal thong. And as manly as I am, the only thing that I could think of is, man, that's gotta chafe.
Oh, yeah. I was given a standing ovation myself. How do you pull that off?
So, like, perhaps, like, people would be more interested in playing as the female character if, well, no, okay, I'm actually not sure where I was going with that. I was going to say if, like, they weren't just, like, objects and they were actual characters, but perhaps more people would play as the female if, you know, they were all objects with, like, incredible asses and metal thongs. Who knows?
Well, I have to say, for games such as, like, say, Mass Effect 2, I hear that female Shepard is really the way to play that game. I haven't played as her yet, but from everything I hear, she's just a much more interesting character, and her voice and such is much more fleshed out. She's got different dialogue than the male Shepard, and I'm really going to have to give that a try sometime, because it makes it sound like playing as a female might actually make the game more interesting, and making Mass Effect 2 more interesting is always good, because that's a great game.
Right, and like the third one, the third game is going to be the first one with the female version of Shepard on the cover. So it looks like, yeah, it looks like these companies have perhaps like decided that it was a stupid belief that having a female character on the box would sell less copies, and perhaps like the problem was like the lack of marketing and stuff for games like Beyond Good and Evil. So I'm glad to see BioWare giving it a shot. And it's not as if like people would stop playing that series just because there's a woman on the cover.
Exactly.
Right?
I think it would be pretty mind-blowing, though, if they had female and male Shepard making out on the cover. That would, like, be incredible.
Like, what would you guys say is, like, perhaps, like, the most fleshed-out female character in a video game that you've seen? Is there even such a thing?
Are we talking main characters or characters just in video games?
Well, I guess the list of main characters would be pretty short, but
yeah,
I don't know if you can you can do both, I guess, like a main character and a side character.
I'd say the cast of Persona 4 is all very well fleshed out, and regardless of whether they're female or male or anything, even if they're giant teddy bears, they fleshed out everything in that game, and I think that's a great example of excellent storytelling in a video game, regardless of which angle you attack it from, because they really made a great story all around.
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, that was one of the things that I wanted to bring up later. There's like Persona 3 Portable, which came out on the PSP, and it added the possibility to play as a female character.
Yes.
And, you know, like those games are completely about like the relationships that you build with the secondary characters, and like there's like dating sim elements to them. I mean, so like having the opportunity to play as a female is changes that whole aspect completely. All of a sudden, like, I haven't played it myself, and I haven't even played like the original on the PS2, but I did listen to Warning, a huge podcast, where one of the guys was describing it, and basically like characters that he disliked in the original game back when he played as a guy, suddenly like were completely different when he played as a girl. I mean, for instance, like there were perhaps like this bitchy girl who didn't really like get along with anyone, but when you play as the girl, all of a sudden like she's like your girlfriend, you know, like your best friend, and like that kind of thing changes like the whole story basically.
Yeah, I really appreciated what they did with Persona 3 Portable. They didn't just put in a female and say, hey, that's it. It actually changes the perspective of the story pretty significantly, how characters interact with you, how you interact with them, changes all your menus, changes your battle music. They really added a lot to that, and even dialogue choices change. Like, near the beginning of the game, like one of the characters will say, hey, why is he the leader? I want to be the leader. And if you play as a woman, you'll say, why is she the leader? She's a girl. And little changes like that just make it genuinely feel like you're playing as a new story. She's even got a different background story for her, and I really appreciate that. It made the game interesting again, even though I've already beaten the original.
Oh, nice, cool. But yeah, like they didn't just do a character swap. Like, it's actually whole new relationships, whole new story, dialogue, and absolutely, like, it makes almost like a whole new game.
I hear Dragon Age does something similar.
Oh, yes. I believe I bogarted the female chick fleshed out topic, and we didn't hear Chris's or Andrew's answers.
Fleshed
I really
out
can't
female
think of a
character.
Lot.
Well, I mean, it kind of depends on what you mean by fleshed out, but and I don't mean that in the dirty sense, but well-rounded female character. I mean, you could go for Lara Croft. I mean, she's as a character, you know, having a story, having a motivation, having a background, having a rogues gallery of people she interacts with, she's as complex, arguably, as, what's his name, Nathan Drake in The Uncharted. Also as big of a despicable person as Nathan exactly. Drake. I think both those people are pretty horrible human beings, but they're still fun to play as. So.
That's what makes them great characters, though.
Yeah.
That you can make a terrible person that you actually want to play as. Like, I don't like this guy, but I like he's the main character of this game, or that she's the main character of this game.
I don't think the developers are even really intending these people to be horrible. But if you take their actions in the context of our real world, they'd be in jail.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mass murderers.
Possibly committed.
Mass murderers, thieves.
Like, is there even like a single movie where you see like an action movie where you see the hero kill like 600 people? Because that's what I did in Uncharted.
In terms of games, I think some games are actually better when you don't go the killing route. Like in say Mirror's Edge. I played that game with the identity of Faith to me was someone who would not kill somebody unless she absolutely had to. So I played through the entire game, never shooting anybody, never really killing anybody, just like taking down who I had to and kept running. And I really appreciated the game more for that, because I played it mostly as a parkour game, and I didn't see Faith as this just mass murderer just because she's being chased. And some games you have to kill everybody, and as long as you make it satisfying, I'm fine with it. But
I also enjoy the games where, you know, sure, you could go in there guns a-blazing, but I really appreciate the option if you can get through without, you know, get in, get out without being seen and not killing anybody.
I still have a vendetta against all the reviews talking about the poor gunplay in Mirror's Edge, because I played it without shooting a single bullet, and it made me bitter.
It's very impressive, though, because like there's a certain point in that game where they really, really want you to pick up a gun and at least kill a few people. But you managed to get through those parts no problem?
I wouldn't say no problem. I died a few times, but yeah, it's all about the counters, like grabbing their weapons from them, sliding around, just like keeping your distance from everybody, not letting them all gang up on you at once. That's why I really liked it, because it was pretty tactical for a first-person. To me, it was a first-person fighter when you were actually fighting people, because I would not shoot anybody. As soon as I got a gun, I would just throw it on the floor every time, and it just made the game that much more interesting for me.
You know, like, this makes me think, like, why aren't there more first person shooters where the character is a female? Because all of the, you know, like, at this point, all the first-person shooters, you only carry two guns anyway, so it's not as if, like, the strength argument could apply, you know? Like, it's you could have a woman carry two guns, no problem. And it's not as if, like, you know, when you've got a gun in your hands, you're a badass by default. So, like, I don't understand why first-person shooters don't take more that kind of approach, you know? Like, yeah, sure, you're a woman killing everyone, but...
Do you mean first-person shooters or games from the first-person perspective?
I think
Mirror's Edge is like in the first-person perspective.
Right, I wouldn't consider it a shooter.
But I'm actually thinking of shooters, like, you know, Call of Duty stuff. Like, why couldn't Modern Warfare have, like, a female...
Everybody knows females can't fire guns. They don't know how to aim.
Because who played those games the most? The people who don't want to play as a woman.
Well, ever. that's why you put their two guns on screen, if you know what I'm saying.
Wow. Okay. So first person cleavage.
There are live physics going on as you jump.
You have a bunch of multiplayer games with guys just staring down the front.
That'd be horrible. But at the same time, it'd be great for a 3DS game.
What are you
They're
doing?
Coming out at me.
First-person games? Why are you staring at your feet? I ain't staring at my feet.
I can't see my feet.
Can't even see it.
Oh, wow. Well, it's a good thing that no woman listens to this podcast.
Well, interestingly, if you're talking about first-person adventure games, there are a few that feature women, like Mirror's Edge or the Metroid Prime games. Or the Portal games.
Or Portal, that's true.
It's Portal Coffin, but it's more puzzle than a shooter. But you do get to shoot
Portals. Right. I mean, the first-person
games
aren't necessarily shooters.
But, like, you know, like, the... let's assume that at some point Valve is going to make another Half-Life game, which I know is a long shot, because apparently, who knows what they're doing with that. But
Episode 3, guys. Chop, chop.
2017.
Gordon Freeman is so a non-character. Like, why couldn't you play as Alex for, you know, an episode or two?
I'd argue the point that it almost doesn't make a difference what gender your character is in the first-person perspective. Not that it makes a difference normally, but you don't really see or hear from too many first-person perspectives. Like, most first-person characters are either silent or they only talk in cutscenes, and their gender traditionally doesn't play much of a role in anything, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I'm wondering why it's not done more. Like, there's no really inconvenient, I mean, except perhaps the whole, like, dude bros don't want to play as a woman thing. But I think it would be interesting. Like, there is the series, well, the two games, No One Lives Forever, which you played as Kate Archer, a kind of a female James Bond in a very, very tongue-in-cheek 60s spy movie kind of thing. And I really regret having to say that I've never played them, but like that's the only example that I can think of. And that's kind of sad.
I think more games should allow you to choose whether you want to be male or female. And they have to stop being afraid to make differences between them in non-competitive games. Like, it'd be more interesting to play as a female if they were typically faster in these kinds of games and could do more acrobatic stuff, while the guys could do more strength-related things. I know it all comes back to the gender equality thing, but in terms of physical abilities, genders aren't equal, and it's more interesting in the game when there's differences.
You don't want to say that. You'll get branded a, you know, sexist.
Perhaps, but it'd make games more interesting if there was differences between the genders. I'm hiding. I'm in my bunker right now.
So, thank you everyone for listening to the podcast. I know it's not always easy, but especially on days like this. But yeah, thanks for listening. We wouldn't be recording if you weren't listening. And if you like or intensely dislike what you've just heard, I welcome all hate mail or negative comments, really. So please comment on negativeworld.org. You know, subscribe just to tell me to piss off. I'd really appreciate that.
That's how I signed up.
Well, exactly. And now you're a regular, you know, and you can hate me daily. And if you don't want to sign up on Negative World for, I don't know, for health reasons or whatever, you can also comment on our Twitter feed. It's @negative_world. Or you can also comment on the Facebook page, which is not seeing a whole lot of activity. So come on, like, say hello or say fuck you, whatever. Okay. So just look for Negative World on Facebook. And of course, if you actually like this podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes, write us a review. It really helps us reach more people. Rate it 5 stars, no less, because that's how it works.
Yes.
That's how iTunes won't actually accept anything less. So just rate 5 stars and be done with it. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So thank you guys for being here.
Sure thing.
Thank you. Sorry for being an hour late. The Triscuits couldn't wait.
Somehow I wasn't really, you couldn't wait to be on the podcast, and then whoops, no, okay, I can wait an hour and a half later.
I have a horrible life, I apologize.
That toilet paper isn't going to buy itself.
I had to get a porta potty so that I could do this podcast without taking a break.
What, the 2 minutes wasn't enough for you?
Oh no, when I said I had to pull my pants up, I had to wipe too. That's too much information, we move on.
Yes, it is. All right, and thank you, Andrew, for being here.
Sure thing.
Yeah, and I encourage everyone to go, if they haven't already, look at your video on YouTube, Nintendo, Why Won't You Let Me Give You My Money? You just have to, or you can, I guess, look for Andrew Eisen on YouTube.
I'm actually, as far as, you know, some people have asked me about, are you going to do more videos? I'll probably do a couple more, just to see if it's something I like doing and can... I'm probably just a flash in the pan here. That's probably the most successful thing I'll ever do. But I actually have a couple more ideas that I just want to play around with and see if anything comes of it. So you'll probably see another video or two from me, but I don't know if it's something that I will do on a consistent basis from here on out. We'll have to see.
For the record, if you do movie voiceovers, I will watch every movie that you do a trailer for.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right, and before I forget, there's actually another podcast that we did before this one that is not on the iTunes feed. It's for the International Boogerman Summit. Oh my. If you have no idea why we would talk about Boogerman on a podcast, I don't either. I've done it, and I'm still not sure what the point was, but we did it.
Someone's got to talk about Boogerman.
Well, I guess so, and we decided it would be us. So to go check that out, you absolutely have to go on negativeworld.org. I'm sorry, I know you hate that, but you'll have to. And there's also, like, if you look for the episode 13 of this podcast on negativeworld.org, you're going to see that there's an uncensored version that the iTunes subscribers did not get. It's just too much, I guess, for the general public. But if you can stomach it, tons and tons of Sonic discussion and off-topic blabbering, go check it out. All right, so that's it for the podcast, and see you in 2 weeks.
All righty.
Bye.
Goodbye, all.
Cool. All right, so that's a podcast. So
is Boogerman actually coming back? Because I haven't seen or heard hide nor tell hair of that guy since Clayfire.
Sad though is that Sega's giving Sonic a bigger, you know, deal, and Sonic sucked for 10 years.
I've never been a fan of Sonic, so I'm one of those. I never liked the original Sonic the Hedgehog games on the Genesis. I didn't think they were fun to play.
They're not my favorite platformers either. They're especially coming from a Mario fan who likes his controls to be more, sharper than that.
Yeah.
But they're still solid games, and I don't think Sonic's had a good game in like about in like 17 years since like Sonic and Knuckles.
Well, I think the first one that came out on the Wii, I don't remember what it was called. The first one that came out on the Wii. Yeah, that one. I think they had the right idea. I think they were heading in the right direction. I think it was just really early Wii game issues held that one back. And then they fell into a trap of adding an unnecessary gimmick to every single game past that. And it's like, now you can run really, really fast. Wonderful. And turn into a werewolf and punch things. It's like,
terrible.
Why?
And we have something for you furries out there.
I'm already an animal.
But from what I understand, the DS game Sonic Dash, something like that, was really well received.
Oh, Sonic Colors?
No, there was a DS game, but Sonic Colors was also really well received from what I've read. The later one, the one with the sword, Sonic and the Black Knight, maybe, something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
When I first saw the trailer of that, I was like, you got it. You got it. You guys finally found a gimmick that actually works. Because I was thinking, run really fast and slice the crap out of anything that gets in your way. Good Brilliant. Problem. That's not what they did. It's run really fast, stop, and then beat the snot out of something until it falls down, and then keep going. I'm like, ugh. I don't even care about Sonic, and you guys are disappointing me.
Sonic Cycles breaking out of its niche.
And I'm also really Nintendo podcast, and we're talking about Sonic. I'm really the old school Sonic Generations. Man, it's an interesting idea. I like how they're trying to cater to the fans, but the difference between old school Sonic and new school Sonic is so slight. I think even hardcore fans would have a difficulty identifying the two unless they're standing right next to each other, because other than body shape, leg length, and eye color, there's really not a whole heck of a lot of difference between those two.
That's what determines my likeness in a woman.
Let's not go there. You know what I find? You know what I find really interesting? It's that like the last episode that we recorded, I had to cut a whole lot of Sonic-related conversation because it was out of the off topic, you know. And here we are again discussing Sonic. Like, what's up with that?
But you know,
unfortunately, you got one close in Commando.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me when characters do that in video games or movies. In fact, sometimes it bothers me when they don't. For example, Edgar Wright's movie Hot Fuzz. Have you guys seen that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Spoilers, but the whole town did it. So it turns out that the entire town is the bad guy. They, you know, killed a bunch of people, even children, in order to make the town a seemingly nice place to live. So they have the big action sequence at the end, and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost,
yeah,
don't kill anybody. There's a big gunfight, but nobody dies. I'm like,
that was disappointing.
It's okay. At this point, you've earned it. You can slaughter them. They're bad people. In the movie world, they deserve to die, and I felt it really actually hurt the movie that they didn't. They just all got, you know, shot in the shoulder or
stuff. The guy got a chapel through the jaw.
But that was pretty cool. That looked really painful.
Suffering.
I need ice cream. Yeah. I think that shows that my YouTube video is really not very successful because I have no hate mail and very few negative comments.
Yep, you failed.
You and
like, no controversy at all.
I know, better luck.
Everyone just
time.
Agreeing or telling you to get a European Wii for the low price of $300 plus shipping.
Or telling me that I've made them gay.
can you blame them, honestly?
Well, you know, seriously, it's like, you know, 11% of the comments I calculated.
You and Brad Jones from SnackStop, you get together and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
We will convert the world. But the interesting thing is, you know, the 11% of the comments that are, oh, your voice made me gay. I looked at my gender demographics, and 11% of my viewing audience is female. Coincidence? Sorry, ladies.